evening. Welcome to this week's edition of Inside Politics. Tonight, coming to you live from the new Museum of Broadcast Communications at River City at 800 South Wells Street. And we have an audience of about 35 or 40 people joining us this evening on this, the 7th anniversary edition. It was 7 years ago when, thank you very much. Hard to believe. It means that next year is the official, the re-election year. We're up, our 8-year term is up next year, but we thank you not only for those of you who are here at the museum this evening watching the program, but also for those out there in Radio Land who have become regulars to this program, and so far as we hope that you're part of, or we're part of your Thursday night schedule. Joining us this evening, I was going to say around the round table, it's sort of a semicircle this evening. We have Tom Roser, president of the City Club of Chicago, founder of the Republican Assembly of Illinois, and one of the leading minds of the 18th century, who joins us tonight. Sheldon Gardner also joins us, former head of the Civil Division of the State's Attorney's Office under the reign of Bernard Carey, now a lawyer in private practice whose expertise is election law. And who, when he was last on this program, we thought that it was going to be your last appearance, and you were going to be a judge. What happened?
I'm still trying. Didn't make it on the first shot.
Okay, well, keep trying. Phil Krohn also joins us. He, of course, the legendary, at least that's what it says here on the card that he wrote for us, the legendary political consultant who has been a mover and shaker in local politics for a long time, and he put Tom Hines where he is today. You also put Neil Hardigan where he is today. It's not bad, an attorney general and an assessor. Two losers, but what can I say? Move closer to the microphone because they can't hear your important words.
They're winners, too. It all depends how you view things.
That's right. Also with us this evening, we have an old friend of this program who was one of the first panelists on this program, perhaps one of our most controversial panel members. And yes, as you reach for the telephone to perhaps complain about his appearance here this evening, and we will be taking telephone calls if you want to do that, we welcome the former alderman of the 20th Ward and an old friend of this program who, as gentlemen, as you all know, was recently convicted in federal court and will soon be serving his debt to society, Clifford Kelly. Clifford, thank you for joining us. As the program unfolds...
Wait. Rehabilitated prior to his incarceration.
Well, we'll see. We'll make that assessment after the program. We're not going to make it this early in the program. Our telephone number for those of you listening out in Radio Land is 372-0500, and through the magic of Illinois Bell, I understand that you can indeed call us from your home, and somehow through some Dixie cups and string, we'll be able to take your call here. We don't know exactly how it will work, but if you would like to be a test case, do give us a call. 372-0500 is the telephone number, and a little bit later on in the program, we will also walk to the audience, and we'll give an opportunity for those who are here to join us as well. Also, I should mention that throughout the program, we will be having people who will stop in and say hello to us. And one of those who also has joined us, who will be here for a portion of the program, is sort of a new old friend of this program. He was on the program, first of all, I would say about a year and a half ago, and he was just kind of a young whippersnapper at that time. He wanted to be an alderman in the city council, and by golly, he went out and in 1 year managed to win about three elections.
He was a pipsqueak.
He became a pipsqueak after got in. He is the alderman of the 26th Ward, Alderman Luis Gutierrez, who was also the chairman of the Special Events Committee of the Chicago City Council. I would like to begin by talking about the man of the hour, the man of the week, and I'm sure Tom Roser's man of the year, Oliver North. You, Tom, I'm sure have either been glued to the radio or television, listening to every word, watching every raised eyebrow that this Marine has raised over the last couple of days. I know what your assessment's going to be, but your fans, I'm sure, want to hear it.
Well, I think that they came to jeer when Ollie North started to testify and find out he's a superb witness. I think he's an advocate. He is an ideologue. There's no doubt about it. He's an advocate for his point of view. I'm not sure they laid a glove on him so far because he admitted all the things that he did and then went on forward to say that he was glad he did them and that he's a very... That sort of is interesting, but he has been a superb witness, and I think he's advanced the case of contra aid, and so consequently I think he's going to be a real force, and I'm not quite sure, after watching Arthur Lyman, how they're going to handle him for the next couple of days.
Were you fearful that Lyman was going to be the guy that would put him in his place?
Yeah, I was. I thought Lyman would be.
And you still don't think
heavy.
He laid a glove
no,
on him?
No, I don't think he did. I think he tried to lay a glove on him, but I don't think so.
Phil Crone, your reaction?
Well, I think, despite the fact that he's getting rave reviews and right now is high in popularity polls, I saw North's testimony yesterday, and I was appalled by it. And what I'm surprised at is that nobody has directly yet brought up the specific language of the Constitution of the United States, Article 2, Section 3, which says that the president shall take care, with a capital C, to execute the laws of the United States. And that was a law. Now, the president might be able to have some covert activity in other countries, but the one place he couldn't have any covert activity was Nicaragua, because that's where the United States Congress specifically said.
Well, we know a sensitive idealist like you, Crone, would be appalled by this.
I mean, I was also appalled. I was also
one of those things that would cause you.
This man is a man of principle.
It's not a zoning case.
Depends what time it
is. This
is
life.
It may change. It's only 8 minutes.
It's not a high rise.
Shelley, what's your reaction? You're a man of the bar.
I wouldn't believe anything the man said under oath or otherwise. The man thinks he's James Bond. He lives in an unreal world, and anybody who takes this thing seriously, it's an immense joke. The guy went off on his own, is playing his own silly game, and he's ludicrous.
Politically speaking, the court of public opinion, isn't that the most important court, and is he not winning and winning by a landslide in that area?
Everybody's where they started.
The people, in a way, he's going to nail
the people
him.
Who didn't like him from the beginning and don't like Reagan don't like him. The people who like Reagan think he's a hero.
Cliff,
I think if you put the politics aside, I think it's a big joke.
Cliff, your reaction?
I think the Colonel has done a great job relative to public relations. I think a lot of people can relate to the fact that although they may not agree with what he's done, they felt that he was truly believed in what he was doing. However, I don't think that's the issue. They're not after him. They are asking North to implicate someone else in the administration.
And so far, they're
of a higher degree.
Poindexter, and they're blaming on
Poindexter.
When in doubt, blame it on the dead guy, right?
That's right.
The rule of thumb?
I'm sure when they performed that frontal lobotomy on the prior director, they didn't intend to kill him. They just wanted to ask him, when you talk to the president, he would say, you mean Harry Truman.
But I think in the last act, Kelly, they're going to have Oral Roberts come. He raises him from the dead, you know. And
yeah.
After that, Kelly's going to show up.
I'm sure there were parties the night of the director's demise. But I still think that in mentioning Meese and mentioning Schultz and others.
And Bush.
And Bush, right. They're not after North. And I think that everyone knows that a lieutenant colonel, is not going to run the foreign policy of the country. That's not their target.
Alderman Gutierrez, one of the things that this issue has done is bring to into the homes of millions and millions of people the issue of the Contras, and there are many that are suggesting that the Contras are getting a more thorough discussion as to what their role is and their function in Central America than they ever could, even if President Reagan had given a major address. I know Central American policy is something that you have strong feelings about. Is he making inroads into the important battle for the hearts and minds of American people?
I think that, if anything, what the testimony reveals is that the United States should literally, and excuse the expression, but get the hell out of Central America and let Central Americans and the Contadora process work.
And the Cubans.
Because,
and the
well, Cubans. Let me finish, please. I didn't interrupt you, and I think this is a very serious issue. We have, you know, women and men and children, and the movies are out there, and if you don't want to go see Platoon, go see the movies, but let's remember about Vietnam. Let's remember about what happened in this country, and let's remember what happened to this country externally in the loss of lives in Vietnam, and let's remember what happened to this country internally in terms of the division of America.
My question, is Oliver North making it more difficult for people of your persuasion to get that message across? Did he hit a home run yesterday a couple times?
Well, I mean, the guy, you feel sorry for him. I mean, his children, his family. What about the children and the families of the children and the families in Honduras? What about the refugees? What about the fact that this government, the United States government, that he supports so much, what about those children and those families that are in sanctuaries right now in churches, because there are still people who want to give sanctuaries and they still respect churches as sanctuaries. What about those children?
Yeah, Tom, what about them?
What about them? That's what I asked. I moved right now. Is that it?
No. Well, the same question to you. Is he creating greater sympathy for the Contras and wrapping himself in the flag and wrapping them in the flag?
Yes, I think he's doing a superb public relations job for the Contras, a superb public relations job for himself, and I think as a result, in the court of public opinion, which this show uniquely has to understand, is it's going to be very difficult to convict him now without having some fighting in the streets. I just returned from Washington. This guy is becoming, as of today, it may change tomorrow, a folk hero.
It's going to change.
Thanks, because Bill. We know how you know public opinion.
Yeah, right.
This is the man that said Neil Hardigan was going to be the next governor.
Yeah,
that was 3 years ago.
Well, I'll still say
and
be
Daley
the next
was
going
to be the mayor.
He's still going to be the next
and then
governor.
Tom Hines was going to be the mayor.
Well,
now Ollie North is in trouble.
Maybe Gutierrez.
Boy,
will be
the Ollie North
mayor.
T-shirt sales just
went
up.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Well,
I'm sorry.
No,
I'm sorry for bringing up your past.
That's all right. I think that you haven't heard yet from the senators and the congressmen, particularly Inouye, Sarbanes. I don't think that it's going to be a one-way thing. I think they're giving North plenty of room, but he's not going to...
So you think he has received enough rope that they could give it a yank when the time comes?
I think so. But not only that, it's more important are the issues that Alderman Gutierrez raised, which is the way that, for example, the way that North described the Contras, you'd think that they were all patriots in the mold of Jefferson and Adams, when most of the... effort of the Contras are people who were out of the Somoza regime, and I'm sure that there are many young idealists who are in the Contras, but those aren't the people who are running the show.
Also joining us this evening is the Alderman and Committeeman of the 28th Ward, one of the emerging new bright voices in the Chicago City Council in his second term. Let's welcome Alderman Ed Smith. Alderman Smith, your reaction, how is Oliver North playing in the 28th Ward?
He's playing way out in the field, a long way away. But regardless to what people might think of Oliver North, I think he's done himself quite a credible job in these hearings. I think he's done an outstanding job in terms of promoting himself and what he was trying to do. And I think in the final analysis, the senators and those people who are going to come behind him are going to be a long ways behind. They're going to have a tough time trying to catch up because he's done an incredible job in terms of public relations and promoting himself and what he was trying to do in administration.
Tom, what's his... we're going to button up the Oliver North discussion. What's going to happen to him? What's his future?
I think that depending on the next couple of days when he testifies, he could... so far, I doubt if he's going to get indicted, and I think that probably he will be the best celebrated lieutenant colonel in Marine history and probably go on to run for Congress.
Or U.S. Senate, maybe?
I think he has a golden chance. He has a following out there.
To really cash it in.
Yeah. I don't say nationally. I say Congress.
Where does he live, Tom?
He lives in Maryland.
I understand Bob Guccione has not offered him any money to take his clothes off.
That's right.
Which usually happens when you're a celebrity.
The one thing we should be grateful to him is they drove Jim and Tammy off the front page.
Oh, yeah. That's
right. Now they'll be back. I'd like to switch gears from some of the garbage that is flying around Washington to some of the garbage that we have problems with here in the city of Chicago. Can you give us your view from the 26th Ward on the great garbage controversy of 87, Alderman Gutierrez?
Well, I think that they're going to have to be some serious soul-searching real quickly in terms of the bulk that is in the wards. In many cities, of course, bulk is picked up and people pay for it. In the city of Chicago, it has been the custom of the city of Chicago to pick it up. I think that City Hall, and that includes the aldermen, and that includes the executive and the legislative branch of government, are going to have to give some serious thought to other ways of disposing of our garbage real quickly, because it's getting very, very expensive. And the next barge that's out on the Mississippi coming around the Gulf of Mexico up to... back to New York is going to be ours from the city of Chicago.
But isn't it an indictment of the Washington administration to not have garbage collections? And I think this is the kind of thing that affects people in every ward in the city, because Chicago had the pickup of the garbage.
Well, I think you got to separate the issue. Now, are we talking about garbage? Are we talking about bulk? In my particular ward, we're talking about bulk. We're not talking about garbage. And there is a distinct difference.
But we're talking about bulk from individuals, not from commercial establishments, aren't we?
That's correct.
Okay. In most of the places I know of, garbage or bulk from commercial establishments is paid for. But bulk or garbage from individuals is not picked up as regularly as other bulk, but it's picked up periodically by this governmental body.
That's true. But right now we have a serious bulk problem because we just don't have the dollars or the places to dump it. And I think ultimately we got to make some decision about where we're going to go with this thing. But right now the problem has gotten to a point where it is acute. And there has to be some decisions made, and I think everybody in the city of Chicago is acutely aware of that.
I think one thing, Ed, that you're certainly going to have to address is the fact that there is no place to put the garbage.
Exactly right.
There was some talk, and I hope that the city follows through with it, to create waste-to-energy plants that now exist in some cities. But I think it's obvious that in every municipality, as evidenced by the garbage barge that went all around, I don't know where that garbage is now, that there is a problem.
It went back to New York.
Right. And here, for instance, even in Chicago, the dumping fee has increased 100%, and the major firm that owns the dumps that we use has cut down the capacity or the loads that the city is allowed to dump. So you're really running into a problem, and of course, the farther away you have to take it, the more expensive it gets. So the problem is only going to be addressed by disposing of it in another way, and hopefully the waste of energy is the way to go.
Speaking of dumping, I would like to switch gears and talk about the dumping that has been going on between Mayor Washington and Patrick Quinn. Tom Roser, do you think there is a political future for Pat Quinn, and he can turn this sacking into a long-term
gain? Oh, I think
definitely
it is. I think that, I don't know, Quinn... I'm not sure how Quinn operated in that job, but I think he has come out on top in the public relations battle with Washington, and it comes out to be that not only is he a reformer now, he's a reformer's reformer. A reform mayor has fired him.
The worst
because,
kind.
That's right, because he has not done what the reform mayor wanted him to do, or at least his minions wanted him to do. I think there was a question as to who Quinn was reporting to. He claimed he was reporting to Washington, but other people were intervening in there. There was a top layer of staff, and so consequently, I think Quinn comes out looking pretty good, and so consequently, he's on top, I think, of the public relations battle, and the mayor is not.
You agree with that?
I agree with that. I think when you get a situation on the same day that the mayor gets his man elected as head of the Cook County Central Committee, he dumps the person who is generally regarded as a reformer, generally regarded as doing a good job, even though he's a difficult personality, it really looks like the mayor is rejecting the kind of reform, and Quinn looks good.
Ed?
You know, I've heard all kinds of stories about this, but people got to understand that when you work for an individual, you are responsible to that individual. And you have the individual that you're working for has the wherewithal to fire you or let you go whenever he wants to let you go. And obviously, if you're not together philosophically, then you're going to have some problems trying to get along. So I don't see all of this bit about... He was the great reformer. He couldn't get along with the mayor. The mayor couldn't get along with you. I have a responsibility to get along with the person that I'm working for. And if I can't do that, then I just got to pick up my hat and take a walk. So we got to understand that.
Phil?
Well, I think the problem is that Pat Quinn had been elected to a public office, and he was independent in the sense that he didn't have an obligation to take orders from anyone.
He was a star.
Yeah, but and he was also an elected official.
Right.
When he joined the cabinet... he became part of a team. He was not, there's no, as the mayor said, there's no room for mavericks, namely unbranded steers, in an administrative capacity. And I think
the mayor knew that Patrick Quinn was a loose cannon when he hired him. And didn't he hire him because he knew that he's the type of guy that could have been unleashed against Tom Hines? Wasn't that one of the reasons why he brought in Quinn? He wanted to create the image to the reformers and to the lakefront people that he was going to surround himself with a squeaky clean guy. He brought him in there. He also knew that the guy knew where the bodies were buried when it comes to Tom Hines and tax assessments. And he knew he had a real strong weapon in his arsenal. And when the weapon started to pop off, he dumped him.
Well, then
the
was
you're smiling. Is that true?
I don't think that's true.
Why did he hire him? I mean, everybody in this town knows who Pat Quinn and what Pat Quinn is. Why should the mayor be surprised that he's a maverick?
Well, the mayor hired him, obviously, to do a job.
Did he do it? I
don't know if he did it.
Why not?
Because I'm not the executive branch of government.
Any non-suited tickets for you?
Number one, I'll bring you my...
Any non suited ticket?
Can I answer the question?
I paid mine.
Okay. Can I answer the question? Can I answer the question? Next meeting, I'll bring my canceled check from December of 1986 for $420 okay. for the tickets that I owed outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, for about three and a half.
Number $420
Boy, you're really a scofflaw.
Okay. No,
you don't have any
one.
Respect for law.
I'll bring... And if everybody gives me the Social Security number, since you're all so pure and clean here, give me your driver's license. I'll get them through the computer tomorrow. We'll see how many people appear on this
well,
program.
Get mine. I've been...
Wait. Let's ask. Public disclosure. Clifford, have you paid all your parking tickets? Because you had a problem a few
years
ago.
It's sort of moot, right?
I mean, your problems have gotten bigger.
I paid them then. That's why I had the other problems. I had to get money to pay those parking tickets.
That's great.
But you have no parking problems now.
No, I've paid.
Phil, you...
When Quinn got appointed, I immediately ran to City Hall. I got all my records.
He was good in that respect.
Well,
I did the same thing.
Well, I figured the first thing he was going to do would put everybody who was politically associated with people who were not
in the paper.
Politically associated with him. And so I took care of mine. I think my canceled checks for $800. And
so he helped the city coffers.
Absolutely.
He was useful to watch.
And those were not twofers.
Shelley,
there was no amnesty.
Shelley, when you wanted to be a judge, you had to clean all that stuff up, right?
Did you pay your water?
I walked to work, so I don't have to worry about it.
Tom,
he cleaned it up, and
you?
He still didn't make judge, so it's too late.
What about you?
I think, I didn't have to clean it up, because I live in Park Ridge, and we don't have any parking there
you
at all.
You just buy them right off.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way,
Ed, what about you?
Right off the wall.
Full disclosure now.
Full disclosure, but I think Quinn was useful to Washington.
Yeah.
We're on the question of whether everybody's paid their parking tickets.
I pay my tickets. When I get them, I pay them.
By the way,
nobody.
I want to ask those that are in the audience right now, how many of you in the audience took advantage of Pat Quinn's Revenue Department parking ticket payoff plan? Raise your hands. Okay, we've got about 8-9 people in the audience. We've got an audience of about 45 or 50. Phil?
There's one point,
and then
though,
back to the Alderman Gutierrez.
One thing, though. I you see all these items in columns about, and things that Quinn has actually said about other people having their tickets non-suited. I think if you looked at the record, I'll bet you'd find that those tickets had been non-suited prior to his quitting. He had no comment on it then. It wasn't like it was a secret. Non-suiting is non-suiting. Now, if he sent a memo to the mayor and said, this is terrible, did he do that? No. I think that now the idea of Quinn fighting with the administration that he had been a part of and served on issues that he had not raised while he was there is a political issue.
Alderman Gutierrez, you were making a point.
I was trying. Number one, let me just state for the record that... before he became revenue director, he was my friend. He's my friend when he got fired. He's my friend today. I expect him to be my friend tomorrow, number one. Number two, I also helped elect Mayor Washington, mayor of the city of Chicago, and I expect him to have a full term, and I will judge him on the basis of his full term and not one incident.
And he was your friend yesterday and tomorrow.
And he will be tomorrow.
I hope so. Speaking of departments where there's a little chaos, tell us about all these rumors that we're reading about problems in special events. We got a new cultural affairs director, and according to the papers, Lois Weisberg doesn't like reporting to Joan Harris. Can you offer any insight into that?
I can't offer any insight into that because I've been chairman now for about 2.5 months. And
do you have a tuxedo yet?
No, I don't have a tuxedo. That's why I didn't come to the opening of this splendid, splendid place. But let me just say, I haven't really had enough time to really look into the
budget. How are you
going
to get to Congress if you don't move faster?
Well, the thing is to move slowly.
Not many tuxedos are worn in the 8th Congressional.
Let me just say, paying my parking tickets is one, and we're going to check you out for the next meeting, even if you do live in Park Ridge.
Check me out. Go ahead.
Will.
He lives in Park Ridge. I live in Park Ridge.
Check Rosa out, because Sheldon is mouthing off.
Right. I know you're at least twice my age, so you've had at least twice the amount of time I've had to collect them. So we'll find some, I'm sure, somewhere.
You're catching up fast, kid.
I'm trying. I know y'all got here before I did. I got here late. But let me just say that special events will run well. It is running well. I don't know about the interpersonalities of these individuals and what they're fighting around. I look at the budget. We had a great taste of Chicago. Come on. And the cultural activities are coming along, and we're going to have to better them, but that's part of government. That's what we'll do.
Okay, let's switch gears back to national politics after I mention, for those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to Inside Politics. It is our 7th anniversary broadcast. We're coming to you live from the new Museum of Broadcast Communications at River City, 800 South Wells Street. Sheldon Gardner joins us this evening, as does Tom Roser, as does Phil Crone, as does Clifford Kelly, and two representatives of the Chicago City Council, good friends Ed Smith, Alderman of the 28th Ward, and Alderman Luis Gutierrez of the 26th Ward. Not front pages, but about page 8 or 9 today, the story of a past drug problem involving Mrs. Michael Dukakis, governor of Massachusetts. I mean,
that is really one of the most intriguing stories in the world. She was hooked on diet pills.
Is it significant?
No. It's something I'd like to be hooked on, diet pills, incidentally.
If they were successful.
Yeah.
You and I could both overdose on those.
It shows you how ridiculous this presidential campaign is going, where everybody has to stand up, everybody's wife has to stand up particularly, and say, I'm guilty of... It's the Betty Ford syndrome, right? Somebody that I had dinner with tonight said it's the Betty Ford syndrome. Consequently, she was hooked on diet pills, and there is Mike Dukakis standing behind her, his eyes glistening. This is the most revolting, nauseating...
He's behind her 1,000%,
yeah, I understand. Behind her 1,000%. I think it's ridiculous. If this is full disclosure, and this is reform politics, I'll take vanilla.
Phil.
You can get a lot of homework done on Dexedrine.
Yeah. No, is it... All those people that are laughing, they know exactly what Phil meant.
Yeah.
Do you have are we going to hear more of this?
Huh?
By the way, in an interview that many of you, in case you just tuned in, just concluded on Channel 11, John Calloway and I interviewed Paul Simon tonight, and he was asked whether there was anything in his background at all that could ever come out that would be derogatory.
You're the dog that's hooked on Milkbone.
He said no.
Wore a long tie.
It once wore a long tie. That was it.
What did he say?
No, he said nothing. Absolutely nothing. He said that he's never done anything wrong, and he also...
I believe him. That's a sad thing about it.
That's right.
Is he Catholic?
Is he Catholic?
No, his wife.
No, his wife is.
He's a son of a Protestant minister.
Matter of fact, they wrote a book on mixed
marriages. They just watched The Confessional, that's all.
They wrote a very good book on mixed marriages. I don't know.
Sure. I would like, on the issue of...
She's taller than he is,
too. By the way, Paul Simon is going to be the next president.
Seriously. I think he won the debate.
No doubt.
You know what? A lot of people in the audience laughed when you said that. Let's go down the list, if I can remember all seven of them. I would like you to show with your applause who you would like to be the next president of the United States. Paul Simon... Michael Dukakis, Richard Gebhardt, Jesse Jackson.
Wait a minute, let's get the Gebhardt vote again.
I think we got it. I don't want to embarrass the man. We won't go there. Jesse Jackson.
Come on. There's some people there.
Smith, aren't you going to clap?
Hey!
It was taking attendance.
Albert Gore.
He was impressive.
Okay. Who am we forgetting?
Oh, Babbitt.
Bruce Babbitt.
How could you forget him?
So we always forget Bruce Babbitt. Bruce Babbitt.
As a matter of fact, I'll go further. I'll predict...
Well, just a minute. Just a minute. Joseph Biden. George Bush.
Oh. He's with Gebhardt.
Yeah, they went to the men's
room.
Well,
you got
to
go with the other.
How about Jack Kemp?
That's
how about Bob Dole?
One person.
Pete DuPont. Alexander Haig.
I'm in
charge.
He's
in control.
None of the above.
You were going to make another prediction.
That I wouldn't be surprised if the ticket wound up being Simon and Dukakis. Dukakis because he's a governor.
How about Simon and Garfunkel?
You know what? That might be a great ticket. And they'd sing their way to the White House. No, I think the reason Paul Simon is going to get the nomination is because...
Because you
he's
have
to do very well. No, I have nothing to do with the campaign. He's going to do very... Maybe that's one of the reasons he's going to win. I don't know if he's going to carry Iowa. He's going to do very well in Iowa. He's going to do better than expected in New Hampshire. He's going to do well in the South. And then he's going to win Illinois big. And I think he can win industrial states. He was born in Oregon. He can run very well in a state like Oregon. That record...
Isn't this just wishful thinking?
No,
you just want a president that knows who Phil Crone is. Be honest. Let's all be honest. You know, I just finished an interview with Paul Simon, and it's very difficult because Paul Simon has been a friend of mine for 20 years. He's been a friend of a lot of people in the media and outside the media for a long time. It's very difficult to cover someone when they're very good friends.
Yeah, but he's got good friends in the media all over the country.
I know.
You ought to see what the guy wrote about him. And then I'm everywhere I go in an airport, I pick up the paper, and there's somebody's got a column.
What are you smoking, Phil?
A guy in
Denver. What are you smoking?
You don't think he's got a chance?
He hasn't got a chance.
Okay,
Ed, do you think he's got a chance?
As long as you're such a big mouth, give me 2-to-1 odds and name the amount.
Well, all right, let's go, big mouth.
All right. A nickel to a dime.
Well, that certifies you're a real Republican, Shelley. If anybody didn't believe it,
I was.
Let's accept
Phil.
Those are fighting words.
I remember when you were advising me from the Republican Party.
Yeah, but I had the brains to get out.
Well, I think they kind of encouraged you.
I'll say this about Simon. He has a distinctive thing. One distinctive thing Simon has. Look at his earlobes. They are the most unusual earlobes in the world.
You know what?
I wanted to touch them tonight. I wanted to reach out and touch them, but I didn't. Did Lyndon
Johnson ever pick them up?
No. What about... look at the presidential field and give me your assessment of who, in your opinion, is going to go all the way.
Well, that depends on a multiplicity of factors.
Of course it does, but what does it really mean?
That means he's not ready to tell you.
And you can never tell how these things are going to fall out. Obviously,
that's true, too.
Paul Simon does have some qualities. And
that's true, too.
He's a U.S. senator. He's been a congressman.
Right. Okay.
And there's only one poll that counts. Are you going to say that?
No. So far, you haven't said anything. But go ahead. Keep going.
But you've done it very well.
Now, who is going to be, in your opinion, look into that crystal ball? You know, it doesn't have to be the 28th ward. Who's going to be the candidate?
But obviously, he has to stay in there, and we got just...
Ooh, the person that makes it all the way has to stay in there.
Yeah, that's
fair. The person
fair.
That makes it all the way has to stay in there and make sure that as he goes along, he builds the right kind of...
So he gets more votes than anybody else. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we just had an example of why you get that special insight when you listen to Inside Politics. Cliff, we haven't heard from you in about 5 minutes. Who do you think... Let me ask you the same question. Look into that crystal ball, because all those 7 candidates are waiting for your personal endorsement.
Right. Absolutely.
And you were for John Glenn, and look what happened to him. This guy is $2 million in debt.
Yep. And talking about running again.
That's right. Look at the field and give us your scenario for victory for somebody.
I think the crowd was right at Ed's suggestion and the response, none of the above. I really think that my feeling at this point is that it won't be decided until the convention. And in fact, none of these 7 may be the eventual nominee.
Give us...
Cuomo.
Cuomo?
Who was around making speeches and saying he's not going to run, but he's been very well received at a number of major events and conventions he's been to in the last month. He gave some great position papers at the U.S. Conference of Mayors. A lot of the guys like him. I see him as someone, unless there is something that happens to one of these 7 that's very positive very soon, I think Cuomo can make it.
Alderman Gutierrez, well, the last time you were on this program, it was shortly after Paul Simon announced, and you stunned me and everyone else when you said that no one from Paul Simon's campaign...
Still haven't.
Really? They must not listen to your show. Because they still haven't called me, or they don't think... I'm sorry, that's arrogance on my part.
No, I don't think it's arrogance on your part. I mean, a guy wants to run for president
of the
United States.
Hispanic boss of Chicago, they ought to call
no,
you.
No, but let me say no.
Are they softened Puerto Ricans? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. All I know is they haven't called me. I haven't spoken to them. But let me just answer the question since everybody's gotten an opportunity to answer the question. And I'll answer it this way. If I had to vote tonight, I'd vote for Jesse Jackson tonight for president of the United States. But I like Dukakis very, very much.
Why?
Because I think he's been very good, especially on Hispanic issues in Massachusetts, and has a long history and has a very, very good record.
Speaks fluent Spanish.
Speaks fluent. He almost embarrassed me the other day when I met him, when I spoke to him in Spanish. He speaks Spanish very
well. I understand Manny Torres is taking lessons from you. Is that true?
Let's leave. You know, Manny Torres is a resident of the...
Sleeping Dogs Lie.
And he's the committeeman of my ward, and as long as he is, we're going to...
How long will that be?
I'm not sure. But let's leave that one alone. But again, I just say of all of them, if I were to vote tonight, I'd vote for Jesse Jackson. But I'm very, very impressed by Dukakis.
Has he called you?
No, but I spoke to him once. But you don't have to call me for me to... I'm literate. I can read. I listen to...
No, but come on. Come on. I mean, you're a politician. Doesn't every politician like to be wined and dined and stroked by a politician? And if somebody called you...
I don't think I've been in office long enough to know what that's about. Yeah.
No stroking either.
Ed, has anybody called you for your presidential endorsement?
No, there's a message in there, too. I'm not important.
Tom Roser, you are on the national...
They're all in Iowa getting the farmer.
You are on the national...
They're all in Iowa getting the farmer.
You're on the national steering committee of the Jack Kemp for President campaign, which is, and everyone knows, is just sort of taken off like the Led Zeppelin.
That is wrong.
It is wrong.
The guy has raised $3 million, and you're going to say this. The first time I was on this show, all these wise guys, the land of nod, everybody sitting around, Reagan is an ex-actor, and he never will make it. I want to tell you, Reagan is an ex-actor. Maybe he made it, maybe he didn't, but he got elected. I was the only guy to say it. Now, I'm the only guy to say that Kemp is going to be the next president of the United States. Mark the tape, flag the tape, and when you play it again, where's the guy? Flag the tape, because that's what's going to happen. Kemp is right. He's going to be the next president. There.
All right. It's, 20 minutes before 8. Jack Kemp is going to be the next president of the United States.
Right.
And I remember what you said earlier this week on Chicago Tonight when you said that Paul Simon was going to vote for Bork. The next day I read in the paper, he's going to be against Bork.
Well, I helped him that.
You helped? Yeah. Give us the scenario, how he makes it, if he's not caught on fire yet. I mean, Bush is going to...
Well, you can't say he hasn't he has.
I mean, that's what
everyone's saying. The polls mean nothing. Only to you newsmen do they mean something. Right now, it doesn't mean a thing until you get into Iowa. I think he's going to do very high in Iowa. He's going to be first or second in Iowa. The evangelicals are for him. I think Iowa is going to turn very strongly for Kemp. He's going to be first or second, and after that, New Hampshire. He's probably going to carry New Hampshire, and from that on, he's going to be on the cover of Time.
Shelley, your guy is Bob Dole. Why?
That's right. I think Bob Dole is one of the two or three people that's shown leadership in the country. Hollings and Baker are two others. I think they're really the class. And by the way, if I were picking a Democrat, and we talked about this, Cliff, Bradley is really somebody who is quite classy.
He's a great mayor of Los Angeles.
Okay, we have a question from the audience here. A gentleman, he wanted to ask a question about the Commonwealth Edison rate hike. Your first name and last name, if you'd like, and your question.
Stephen is the first name. The question related to the involvement of Governor Thompson, Neil Hardigan, and Mr. Daley. It's beyond my comprehension what they are doing backing a raise, a hike, a very substantial hike in the entire program, which seems to be a sellout as far as Commonwealth Edison is concerned.
Sheldon Gardner?
Well, it seems to be strange because these people theoretically are very sophisticated in touch with their constituency. Apparently, they thought that it would sell by giving people a lot of stability, which was the big argument for it, and they really didn't do their homework in finding out that it wasn't saleable.
I think it's the arrogance of power. I think Thompson, again, has sort of played ball with the big boys, as he always does, big corporations and big labor, and consequently he played with a big corporation and found out that he was absolutely behind the eight ball on this thing. So, in fact, it serves him right. I think it was ill-suited and short-sighted at the outset.
Okay, we have another question. Your name and your question, sir.
Steve Miller, Tom Roser.
Yeah.
Is there any indication that the Kemp campaign can get some traction, even if it doesn't have it now?
This is a guy from the audience who didn't hear what I said before. But I'm telling you, he has traction. You're not going to see it until Iowa starts. All I can say, Miller, is that trust me, you know I've always been right.
Invisible traction.
I want to ask...
He's going to get that traction in cow dung over in Iowa.
I'll write you a letter.
Is Henry here tonight? Is Henry here tonight? One of our regular callers? Because he called Tommy. He said he was going to be here. So we have another question back here. Your name and your question, sir.
My name is Robert Clark. I'd like to know, Oliver North stated that it wasn't necessary to inform his superiors or every what was that operation that he was doing. So when was President Reagan going to find out, I mean, if the Contras won, where was President Reagan going to find out that they did? Reading the Washington Post, wake up one morning. I mean, it's inconceivable.
We hope he wakes up one morning.
Yeah, that he was uninformed of what was going on.
Cliff?
No, I believe Colonel North said he didn't do anything without the authority of his superiors.
Poindexter.
That's right.
Yeah.
At least in plot.
That's, yeah, no, yeah. He said he believed the president knew, and I guess he surmised that based on the fact that he did not think that Admiral Poindexter would authorize this sort of thing without the commander-in-chief knowing about it. Of course, the thing that interests me is all of the inconsistencies that the president has stated that have proven since to be totally untrue. I think there were at least two press conferences, national, where the president sits there in the Oval Office, not a press conference, but an address, because he doesn't like the press conferences because he has to respond. But when he's, you know, when he
said... Well, those questions are tough.
Yeah, you know, when he said that we would never trade or negotiate with terrorists. And then, obviously, we have traded arms for hostages. And, of course, that has put a whole different light on what we're doing relative to foreign policy. But that's a lost issue now because of all the other things.
We have another question. Your name and your question, sir.
Hi, I'm Kelly. Before Ollie North started his three-day-long speech, Congress gave, I don't know, $130, $150 million to the Contras. Wonder how many hundred millions of dollars Ollie North has managed to raise.
Tom, is he helping fundraising?
You mean privately?
Congress, and privately.
I think that it's going to be a very difficult thing for the Congress to oppose now. I think it's going to be difficult for a number of swing votes in the Congress to oppose Contra Aid. I think it's helped immeasurably. I'd ask Cliff Kelly, who follows that, objectively, wouldn't you say that the situation for Contra Aid has improved, even though I know you don't support it, approved?
I never said I didn't support it.
Okay, has improved.
I just said...
Do you support it?
I'm not sure, because I tell you, the reason I can't be positive is because of all of the inconsistent reports we get as to what is being done with the money. You know, we send them for humanitarian purposes, and we find out it's not going there, allegedly. So it's very difficult to tell. But I am totally against misleading Congress and lying to Congress. I think one of the most emotional...
Are you for misleading anybody?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think one of the most emotional instances that happened in the hearings was when, after the colonel has suggested that he has gone through a lot and that, in fact, he distrusts Congress, which I think was a bad thing. I think that's the only bad thing he did.
I think that's a good thing he did. I distrust
Well, I don't
Congress
think
only.
So, but when the chairman sat there and said what he said, the chairman was also saying that you're not the only one who's a hero, and I think a lot of people up until that point did not know what the chairman has been through, having had his family incarcerated as a Japanese-American and with a Silver Star and leaving his arm in Italy and all that sort of thing, and he still believes that the system works without misleading people. I think that Colonel North totally believes in what he's done, but again, I think that misleading Congress was the wrong thing to do. I'm not saying that what was done was necessarily wrong, but I think more people had to be involved in it. As a gentleman back here said, did the president know? I think something of that momentous decision-making has to be done at the top and not somebody even as the director of the CIA.
What's going to happen when this is all over, and let's look 2-3 years ahead, what's going to change? What is going to be different about the way that government and covert operations are handled in the United States and the type of people that gravitate to positions in the National Security Council and who have the same mental state as Oliver North? Shelley?
Well, you know, it's the old story. If you go off on your own and you get caught, you're in trouble. I mean, they, you know, in the covert situations, people will get sent out, and when they get caught, they get abandoned.
But there is a way to perform a covert operation that's legal. And I think that's what the new people in the NSC are saying.
But not with a wild gun.
You never send
North out to run a covert operation because he isn't capable mentally.
But Shelley, North said he was authorized to do what he did. He said he did nothing without authorization.
The question is whether he is really a loose cannon, and based on the last couple of days, he does not seem to be a loose cannon, or at least the only loose cannon. Ed Smith.
Yeah, I think what you see in the future, any time that's a covert operation, I think you'll see those people involved will be much more discreet. They will take greater pains in doing the planning and there will be more involvement in terms of the outcome, planning the outcome, and getting around these kind of things. I don't think you're going
to
see.
Alderman Gutierrez is shaking his head. It seems to me that a lot of this testimony, you can go back to Watergate, it can go back to the investigation of the CIA. Is this a cyclical thing? Are we going to be having an investigation about something else similar in nature 10 years from now, Alderman Gutierrez?
I don't know if we are. I know that covert operations have been conducted by this country for many, many years. I mean, Kennedy didn't get into trouble because of the Bay of Pigs, except for the embarrassment of what happened there. But there have been, I mean, that was a legal covert operation. But what surprises me so much is that we can all sit here. None of us are going to go to Nicaragua to fight with the Contras at this table. Okay,
Number one.
None of us is going to go and fight with the Contras against the Nicaraguan government. Number two, son Sandinistas. Number two, and what is fundamentally, I find very disturbing about this discussion, is that we can talk so leisurely about whether it's a legal or illegal covert operation in another country and in their internal affairs. I mean, gentlemen, these are countries. These are people. There are cultures. There are histories. I mean, it's okay. As long as it's legal, quote unquote, it's okay to interfere. And yet, no one here addresses the issue of South Africa. No one here addresses that issue and what's happening. Let's send money to the Contras, but let's not boycott South Africa. There's a fundamental contradiction in what we're talking about.
Alderman Gutierrez, as you were speaking, a member of our audience wanted to jump in with a question or comment. Your name and your comment or question.
My name's Tom. I just wanted to ask anybody who cares to comment. Often these committee hearings, they get this much attention, have the effect of really boosting the career of someone who serves on the panel. And I would just ask anybody, is there any one particular person on the committee looking into this that has been especially impressive and has become sort of a star of this, and then also somebody who looks especially bad from anyone's perspective?
Ironically, in my opinion, the only star thus far has been Colonel North.
Right. Yeah.
We haven't seen a Sam Irving yet.
Right.
I don't know whether we will get one out of this, but, of course, I think the hearings have a long way to go.
Okay, we have a question and comment.
Thank you, DeMond. Joseph Slovenek. Thank you, Mr. DeMond. The Arms Export Control Act requires that the administration notify Congress about every arms sales of this type. I want to ask everyone who's willing to comment whether or not they believe the Reagan administration broke this law. I also believe, from what I'm hearing this evening, that the American public needs to pay a lot more of attention to the need to appoint honest people to office. And I hope that the presidential campaign pays more attention to serious issues like, why did President Reagan triple the budget deficit when he said he was going to have a balanced budget? Okay, thank you.
All right, let's let Tom, because I know Tom wants to respond to that. Tom,
why did
Reagan triple the deficit?
He tripled the deficit because first thing happened, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
We want everybody to get their pens and pencils out. We don't want to miss this at all. Go ahead,
first
Tom.
First thing happened was that Paul Volcker, head of the Federal Reserve Board, squashed inflation so quickly that it really started the pumps priming, and consequently a deficit was born. That was one thing. Secondly, the defense budget was greater. The third thing was the Congress did not cut spending as Reagan wanted. Those are the three reasons.
We have a question coming.
The gentleman asked, there's a two-part question. The Arms Export Control Act has unquestionably been violated because when we sell arms to another country, the agreement is that they do not resell those arms to a third country without our permission, without Congress's permission, and obviously that was not the case to sell arms to Iran.
I think that's right. It was violated.
Okay, question coming.
My name is Dick Kelly, and I want to make a comment and have you respond to it. It seems to me the real problem doesn't rest with the executive branch. It rests with the congressional branch, the House and Senate Intelligence Committee, since the time of the Senator Church, don't seem to want to investigate and find out what's going on with the CIA and the covert operations. Even the liberal Democrats, liberal Republicans, seem to give every executive president a lot of leeway in doing what they want to do. And it seems like we'll sacrifice one or two people, but then in the long run we'll have the same thing come up possibly under a Democrat in 1988.
That's because even liberals understand, unlike you, sir, that it is not civics 101. So So consequently, when one goes into the Congress and one sees the stakes in foreign policy, one understands that there has to be covert operations. And the thing about Ollie North did was educate this country about the need for covert operations.
But what about the issue that Mr. Kelly brought up, and that is whether or not, when you have an oversight committee, House and Senate, both with big, big budgets, what type of person does it draw to the committee, and can that person, in the climate of Washington, can that person ever ask the real hardball questions that have to be asked?
Senator Church did, but Senator Durenberger
tried to do it, and there were all kinds of evidence that he was being blackmailed by the CIA.
But also questions that have been put to the right people, the right questions by these oversight committees, have elicited false answers. That's been admitted during the hearings. I don't think
so. The greatest oversight in the world is not going to help if you've got a guy who's lying through his teeth.
I don't think they have the time or the effort to go out and investigate every misstatement that somebody makes, nor would they
Alderman Gutierrez.
But I think his question should be well taken, and that is the fact that there is a conservative tide in the United States, and it becomes increasingly more difficult to question the actions of government and what our foreign policy is. And we're just going to have to, I guess, elect politicians who aren't so worried about getting reelected as they are about doing the job they set about when they ran for election.
Sort of like you, Alderman Gutierrez.
Thank you very much.
Question and comment.
Well, my name's Mark, and what I've been understanding from the hearings is that Attorney General Mises had some conflict of interest with actually investigating what was going on. In the state of Illinois, the Attorney General is elected in a separate election. He's not appointed. What would be the possibility of getting the Attorney General elected for the United States?
You have to change the Constitution in order to do it.
Is that a good idea? What about the issue, since we're talking about competence and who a president appoints and surrounds himself with? Tom, do you favor a more thorough discussion of who a presidential candidate would surround himself with after election? Should a presidential candidate, during the course of a campaign, lay out, if not all members of his cabinet, should he name, let's say, the top five most influential cabinet positions?
I certainly think so. I think it's a good idea. And as a matter of fact, we don't even have any indication on the part of presidential candidates as to who their running mates should be. The only guy that I saw who would announce that was Ronald Reagan in 1976.
And well, Jesse announced that Biden would be his running mate.
Yeah, but I think Biden said that Jesse wouldn't be, but I think there ought to start with running mate.
Would not be.
I think we ought to start with whom their running mate should be, and also I would think that at least an indication as to the selection of the cabinet would be appropriate.
So running mates you think should be announced early?
I do.
You think that's a good idea?
I know it would be impractical politically.
Well, it's unreal.
How many people in the audience here at the museum think that that's a good idea, that a presidential candidate should announce the running mate prior to the primary process? During the primary process?
Somewhere in the election.
Okay, before the... all those who feel that way, applaud. All those who think it's a lousy idea, applaud.
Even.
Phil, what's your thought?
Well, I think that if you had the vice presidential selection made, earlier, then you wouldn't have anything happen at the convention. And people are looking forward to the announcement at the convention. You don't want to deprive the...
You mean especially...
You also can't cut any deals. How can you create a consensus of everything?
I want to say one last thing or one other thing about the Contras. The covert operation. What Alderman Gutierrez said, and nobody commented on, and was treated with just passing, not by you, but was just passed over. I don't mind covert activity if it's to infiltrate for literal intelligence activities to find out what's happening in other countries, conventional spying to find out where the bases are and how many and if they're prepared for combat.
How about assassination?
No, that's what I was getting at.
You know, this is the country, right, that we get all worried because reporters are... Remember when they were watching Gary Hart and the question, should the reporters have been outside of the house and should they have been there and should they have been taking pictures? All of this about a presidential candidate. And I'm not saying that those aren't serious concerns. Yet we can just talk about
covert operations and gathering intelligence in other countries, and nobody questions it.
No, wait,
but we're worried about a presidential candidate. Remember all the...
No, I think everybody's questioning it. I don't agree with that. No. I think we got to be more concerned, though, Luis, other than just with Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And that's not the only issue that's being discussed in these hearings. I am totally concerned about that, but quite frankly, I'm even more concerned about the Gulf and what is going on there and with the reflagging of the Kuwaiti tankers and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's got to have a direct effect on us.
We have about 3 minutes left, and I want to bring up one of the other big stories today, and that is that our good friend Ferdinand Marcos, one of your...
a regular
listener to this program, we might add.
Identified his friend now.
That,
it's awful to keep garbage in Hawaii.
That he is plotting the overthrow of the Philippines and was planning an invasion and is now under basically house arrest. They're not letting him out of the country. What should we do with this guy, Tom? Now, even you are not a big fan of Ferdinand Marcos.
No, I'm not a big fan.
I love that.
What
even
should,
you.
That's right.
Like,
what
should happen,
I think we ought to send him to Downers Grove or we
where there's a lot of downers, I understand. Now, what should they do?
I think that they just have to keep him under house arrest in Hawaii or wherever he wishes. I seriously don't know what to do with him.
I think
Wendy's, they were correct.
Franchises or something.
Pardon me?
Give him some Wendy's franchises.
Who's yeah. No, give him a shoe franchise. Give him a Kinney shoe store franchise.
O'Connor Goldberg, yeah, right.
Cliff, what about it?
I'm not sure whether we have the authority to keep him here.
Well,
against his own. I mean, really.
If he wants to go, let him go and take the money and run?
Well, he can't go anyplace else. Nobody else will accept him. He doesn't have a passport.
They would accept him if evidently they want him back in the Philippines to try him. And he's willing to go.
I think they'd rather try
and
him
I think,
and I think
that the reason he is willing to go is because he's got some sort of scheme cooked up, obviously. So.
Speaking of a scheme that's cooked up, we have a scheme that's cooked up. First of all, we are out of time, and I want to thank everyone who listened to the program this evening and also all of you who came down to the Museum of Broadcast Communications to help us celebrate our 7th anniversary of Inside Politics. I hope you will all continue to listen as we move into an exciting year of political coverage. Our thanks to Sheldon Gardner for joining us this evening, Cliff Kelly, Phil Crone, Alderman Luis Gutierrez, Alderman Ed Smith, and our old friend Tom Roser. We're going to leave you with the tune of Happy Days Are Here Again as Tom Roser bangs away on the 88, Sarah, thanks to Al Ruddenclaw and Cunningham and Dana Calderon for their assistance in the production of this program. Pick up the pace. Good night, everybody.